Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the Roaring Twenties. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
Welcome to a very special episode of the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, because
it's also an episode of the Lorehounds podcast.
Since, of course, people want Acolyte coverage on the Lorehounds, but this is also the major series I'm using to kick off the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, it made sense to combine the two. So this episode and all Acolyte weekly breakdowns will be released on both feeds, plus the Lorehounds Star Wars feed. And hi, by the way, I'm Alicia.
And I'm John. And today we're breaking down the first 2 episodes of the new Star Wars series, The Acolyte. The first live-action Star Wars set outside the Skywalker saga, taking place in the High Republic era, 100 years before the prequel trilogy.
Hey, future editor Alicia jumping in here for an update from the end of this episode, just to set expectations up front. After going on for over an hour about just the first episode, we decided that we should put the conversation on pause and give the second episode its very own podcast breakdown, which we will get out tomorrow. Community feedback and that separate trailer-based speculation section we're about to mention will be included in the episode 2 breakdown. Okay, back to your previously recorded recording. We'll be following the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast spoiler rules, which means we might mention a character from later or vaguely reference a well-known event just for those who know those stories already. But we promise not to spoil any of the twists and turns.
I promise to try not to.
And don't worry, I'm editing, so I'll bleep him out if he does. And we have also a couple subscriber-only episodes planned this season where John and I will go deeper into how this unfolding story connects with events later in the timeline. We'll tell you more about that later.
We also have a small separate section after our episode breakdowns to discuss speculation based on trailers. We're partitioning that off for those of you who like to avoid that information.
And we'll warn you before we get into that.
For this episode, we're releasing the episode on all feeds at the same time. Starting next week, subscribers will get early access about one day before episodes hit the public.
This is also true for the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast feed, which will follow the same schedule. I am setting up the Canon Padawan Supercast now, but I will include a link already in the show notes, as well as the usual Lorehounds link. And next week, I'll tell you a bit more about what's included in that Supercast.
At the end of the episode, we'll also talk more about what's going on in the Lorehounds feed and the rest of the network this hot lore summer. Check the link tree in the notes for links to all, including our lively Discord, where we're deep in Acolyte discussion.
And for the record, since we always note this on the Canon Timeline podcast, this conversation was recorded on June 6, 2024, and everything is accurate on that date to the best of our knowledge. So welcome, John. I'm excited to talk about the Acolyte. How about you?
I'm excited, too. I'm finally invited to the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast feed. It's very exciting. I've gotten to listen to you and Deadeye Jedi Bob mostly. along with your other guests. And yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, we've been planning this from the start, of course. And this, yeah, this is because it's a good era to launch this podcast, of course, the Canon Timeline, mm-hmm. because it's like we're starting now with something new earlier on.
And we know that new is always better.
Well, no, but
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I also like to drink some member berries from time to time. And there's plenty in this, too.
Yeah, definitely.
How would you describe this series overall? What would you say the premise is?
Oh, that's tough. I would say a murder mystery that gets solved in the first episode, but also mm-hmm. has an underlying layer of mystery involving motivations.
Yeah, I guess instead of a whodunit, I'd call it a whydunit.
That's a good way to put it. I like that.
It's a Disney Plus show, of course, like all Star Wars shows. And the showrunner is Leslie Headland. We talked about her more in the Acolyte preview episode, if you want to listen to that in the Canon Timeline feed. John, did you watch Russian Doll on Netflix?
Not at all. I did not.
Okay. I recommend it. I think you would like it, too. It's kind of like a dark and twisty sci-fi mystery.
Sounds fun. I will wait until after Hot Lore Summer to watch it, but it sounds good.
Yeah, there's two seasons out so far, and it's actually, there's a few characters from that show in this, but not Natasha Lyonne, who's the star of that one.
Right. Okay. Fun. I do like Natasha Lyonne.
Yeah, me too. So The Acolytes will be, the first season anyway, will be 8 episodes. So we're talking about the first two today because they dropped together, and then we're going to be talking about each one weekly over the next 6 weeks. So I'm going to barely acknowledge this, but just the Rotten Tomatoes situation is that there's 94% currently from the critics, meaning 94% of the reviews are, you know, leaning positive, and 41% from quote-unquote fans. But of course, this number is improving. It was worse before the episode launched when there were a lot of comments about, like, mm-hmm. women... Wah, wah, wah. So not really going to get into that, but that's where things stand.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people who are upset that Star Wars doesn't look like it did in 1977 as far as the actors. And right. I'm not with them. I think that every performance in this has been great so far.
Yeah. And this is, you know, this is about a whole wide galaxy. If you don't mm-hmm. use actors from all over our small world, how are you going to recreate the feeling of, you know, the vastness and diversity, especially in the High Republic, which is one of the most prosperous and diverse eras?
Right. Right.
I mean, there's aliens all over. Why wouldn't humans be all different, too?
Suspend your disbelief, O weary traveler.
I mean, what disbelief? It just reflects,
I know.
It just reflects the real world, yeah. So on the Lorehounds podcast, we use something called the Pukila scale, which is where we decide whether how much more or less violent a show or movie is compared to the first season of Rings of Power. So what would be your Pukila ranking for this one, John?
I think minus one.
Really?
It's got fights, but they're mm-hmm. not gory. Right. And it's mostly like, this is definitely a show geared towards a YA audience, I would say.
Okay.
And I think anybody can enjoy it, but I think as far as rating, this is really like a YA show.
Okay. Okay.
And I don't mean that in a negative way. I think it's exciting. Yeah. I think it gives younger viewers sort of like eyes PG, to look through. Yeah. Yeah. And I think Marilyn could do this, and she did, actually, so I don't know why I'm questioning that.
And Marilyn being the first name of we'll hear from her in the feedback section, the one we always call our favorite Tolkien scholar, because she is. So John, what's your hot take on these first two episodes, spoiler free for now? We'll let mm-hmm. everyone know. We're just going to talk about the episodes first without spoilers for those who are still deciding whether or not to watch, and then we'll let mm-hmm. everyone know when we're gonna open the can of spoiler worms.
Yeah, so the few days leading up to this, I had been excited for this series for a long time, but the few days leading up to this, I was thinking, okay, High Republic, Not a lot to latch onto. I've read a little bit of the High Republic books.
Right.
But I haven't even finished one of them. That's why I said a little bit, not a few.
Would you read Light of the Jedi?
I read part of Light of the Jedi. It didn't hook me. And I'm almost done with Convergence. I went to Era 2 first now. Because, fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Phase 2, I guess it's called. And I'm liking that one a lot better. But even those are removed timeline-wise from this series, right? Because this is at the end. Mm-hmm. Those are sort of in the middle of the High Republic era.
Yeah, and so this series is as distant from those books as it is from the prequel era. It's right in between.
Right. So, yeah, I was just like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to have anything to latch on to. I was worried that I wasn't going to feel drawn into the world right away. Like, it was going to be a lot of like taking this information, which is, I think, how I felt in Shogun episode one. It took a lot for me to like take in the information in episode one. Only on rewatch did I get to really enjoy it. But this, I was right in. I turn it on and I'm right in. I feel like they opened it up really well. I feel like the best thing about this is that they immediately draw you into character motivations instead of making you focus on wonky lore. You pick up the wonky lore on the way, but they really do make the character arc central. And that is the sign of a good storyteller. And so I'm really glad that they did that. The world looks great. I mean, Star Wars production is basically always 10 out of 10. And it lives up to it here. It looks great. I didn't recognize certain actors who were in alien makeup, which is fun. And I'm just so pleased with this. Every casting I mentioned before is right on point. Everyone feels right. And the story is intriguing to the point where I almost wish it were a binge series, even though I always say I don't want a binge series because I just want to know what happens.
Right. No, it definitely left me with intrigue. And I'm glad that we get these weeks in between to pick it apart. But yeah, this will be a fun binge series. It'll be fun to go back and re-binge too.
Yep.
So how about you? This certain actor that you're talking about, I'm guessing that's Daphne Keene.
Yeah.
So do you know her from, are you a His Dark Materials fan too?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I didn't watch season three, but I watched seasons one and two. I want to go back and watch season three.
Oh yeah, you got to watch season three. It wraps it up.
I did read the books too. So I know what happens.
So you know what happens. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I wasn't like itching for season three. I was like, all right, that'll be cool to get to when I get to it.
Right. Yeah, it's minor spoiler. It's a tearjerker.
and Logan, too. She was really good in Logan.
Oh, yeah, it was fun to see her. I did know in advance that she was going to be a Thielen hybrid, a human hybrid. So, but she was unrecognizable when I first saw pictures of her character. But yeah, overall, I loved the first two episodes. It's dark and it's very Star Wars-y and there's lots of world building and layers of intrigue. And these are all like things that are hallmarks of things I like. So it was kind of made for me in some ways, it feels like. I'm glad that there were some reveals going in that people generally expected. And I'm glad they got them all out of the way, like right away, basically in the first episode. I love how practical everything is, like the makeup and the sets, and they filmed on location, especially in Madeira, but also a bit in Wales. It looks amazing. Madeira is a very striking island. And yeah, the work they did in post-production just made everything even more gorgeous. You know, the production design in general is in top form, and I love the music. So the composer is called Michael Abels, and he's best known for doing the scores of Jordan Peele movies, and it's definitely got that eerie vibe to it.
Yeah, definitely. Now that you say that, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and it adds to the mystery feeling.
Right. Yeah, and one thing I wanted to say about the mystery part is, and I obviously no spoilers, but one of the best ways I've seen mystery done in recent years is Severance season one, where each episode or a couple episodes solves a mystery and presents two more.
Right.
And I think that this show is doing a similar thing.
Right. Yeah. Leslie Headland said that it was like an onion and each episode would peel back a new layer.
Well, we'll call it Shrek because ogres are like onions.
All right, shall we break open the spoiler bag and get into episode one?
I would love to.
All right, spoilers begin in 3, 2, 1. episode one is titled Lost / Found. So it looks like all the titles are going to be opposites.
Like, so yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah. Because it's a story about, we find out pretty much immediately, it's a story about two twin sisters, May and Osha, which are obviously being made to represent yin and yang in real world terms, or Bogan and Ashla in Star Wars terms. So, you know, this is going back to the concept we talked about, especially in the Old Republic episodes, about this seeking of balance. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what they're telling us the show is going to be about. Not that Osha is good and May is bad. I think it's going to be about the balance between them.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I think the things that May does are bad, but we'll see.
From whose perspective, though, that's the thing is, I do know this is going to be about shifting perspective. So I wonder, we're seeing things now we might see differently later in the season.
Yep. Fair enough.
So the writer and director of this episode is a showrunner, Leslie Headland. And for this recap, we're going to recap a scene and then talk a bit about it. I'm going to combine a couple scenes that, you know, are covering the same arc, even if they don't necessarily happen back to back in the show.
Makes sense.
We start with the opening crawl. And so opening crawls, this is, I haven't mentioned it yet on the Canon Timeline podcast, but it's like a very important Star Wars thing that happens. It's, we mm-hmm. always care about the opening crawl. It was basically something that George Lucas copied from Flash Gordon. Always ends in four dots, except for Return to the Jedi, for reason people have been analyzing for years. But this one wasn't actually a crawl. They just kind of, the words appeared on screen, which does make it easier to read. And they said, 100 years before the rise of the Empire, it is a time of peace. The Jedi Order and the Galactic Republic have prospered for centuries without war. But in the dark corners of the galaxy, a powerful few learn to use the Force in secret. One of them, a lone assassin, risks discovery to seek revenge.
Mm.
So yeah, we get this 100 years before the rise of the Empire, although we were told in marketing materials it's 100 years before the Phantom Menace, which is an important distinction because one is 119 BBY before the Battle of Yavin and one is 132 BBY.
Mm.
So this is important in terms of who is possibly busy on the Sith side of things. So
that's true. I wonder if they're using Rise of the Empire to refer to the beginnings of corruption.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the beginnings of the rise of power of a important few characters.
Yeah. Yeah, I think.
Because, yeah, mm-hmm. I just don't know if we can. I feel like it makes more sense to be before the prequels.
Right. I mean, it's before the prequels regardless, but it's like how long before the
prequels?
Yeah.
That's what I mean. I feel like it makes more sense to refer to Phantom Menace with that.
Right. Oh, yeah. I see what you mean. So we're just going to assume until told otherwise that it's 132 BBY, so 132 years before the original Star Wars movie is set. But and this time of peace doesn't mean nothing bad ever happens. Mm-hmm. Definitely check out the High Republic recap if you don't know what bad things have happened. I'm sure we'll get references as we go, but this is a golden age of the Jedi and of the Galactic Republic. So John, you said you've been reading Cataclysm. What have you noticed about the High Republic that makes it feel different than what comes later?
It's the Jedi are much more, I think someone said this in our Discord, they're much more of like a police force, right? They are very clearly allied with the Senate, very clearly allied with the Republic, and not this, you know, third party, we just go with the wind and we serve the Republic, but not directly, and we don't meddle with politics. Like, they are very political in a way that it seems it might be taboo later.
Well, but then in the next age, we see them acting as kind of the military.
Right. Yeah.
So I feel like they think that they are more independent, but when you see the way that they behave, that's not mm-hmm. true.
Right. They are really an arm of the Republic.
Right. But they would be offended if you said that to them.
Right. Yeah, I mean, one quote that stuck out to me that I read last night, actually, in Convergence, mm-hmm. was that one of the Jedi, I don't know how to pronounce her name because it's a book, Gela Natal. Maybe it's okay. Gela Natai.
Natal, I think is the last name, but yeah.
Anyway, she's talking to a woman on Arano, and the woman says, you fight for peace? That's like going to the desert to get water.
Mm.
You know, and it really does challenge the whole Jedi way of thinking, right? And I can't, again, I can't spoil later. I want to discuss later, but is it, you know, we see Indara in the next scene. I don't want to go too deep into that yet. We see her refuse to fight at first.
Right.
And so that does seem to be part of the Jedi code.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how well that serves her in the end.
Right. Right. Yes. Well, of course. Yeah. So there are wars. Like there's that civil war that you were referencing. I mean, not a civil war, but a war between two planets over the planet that ends up getting the planet of Jedha involved. We talked about that in the High Republic breakdown. But yeah, this is, I guess, when they're saying centuries without war, they mean it's not like the great civil wars that the Jedi had with the Sith, basically.
Right, right. Yeah, they have small, they consider two planets fighting a small squabble, right? Because that's like
a drop in the bucket, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not allied forces, you know, several planets forming a coalition against other ones. That's a different thing. That's what they would consider a war.
Right, exactly.
I guess it's the Republic itself is not at war, and so there is no war.
That's true. It's kind of like the America and Vietnam, but anyway.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a conflict. It's not a war.
Right, exactly.
We haven't declared war since 1941.
Which is funny because the original Star Wars was in part based on the Vietnam conflict.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, the prequel trilogy is certainly laced with Iraq war era criticisms.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So then the question, of course, left by this opening crawl is, who are the few in the dark corners of the galaxy learning to use the Force in secret? So people immediately jump to Sith. You know, the showrunner herself has talked about what are the Sith doing in this time of secrecy, but also maybe witches?
Yeah, and I'm wondering, because I'm only just getting into this in the High Republic books, but this idea of the path of the hand, I don't know if they're extinct by now, because I haven't finished the books.
Well, we talked about, so minor spoiler that we talked about in the High Republic overview, is that the path kind of evolved, the path of the open hand kind of eventually evolves into a group called the Nihil, which are the main enemies of the first and third phases, because again the phases are out of order chronologically. But there's definitely signs that there may be connections, especially we're going to talk about that spiral we see on May's forehead.
Just because I was like, this doesn't feel like Sith to me. No weapon, things like that.
Right.
That just doesn't feel like the Sith to me. And I could be wrong, but it just feels like the Sith are just use whatever tools are available, right? Just improvise.
Right. Right. So for the Sith, we're in the era of the Rule of Two, and we have an idea of which two Sith would be busy during this time. We'll talk about that at the very end of the episode. Mm-hmm. We talked about it in the preview episode, but you know, the Rule of Two is really just about who is actually a Sith. And there are always exceptions. They always have other people working for them. The Sith often take on more than one apprentice just to force them to fight against each other. I do think, though, based on May's behavior, she's trying to officially become an apprentice. And I think that's why she keeps trying to steal people's lightsabers.
Mm-hmm.
I think she wants to steal it and bleed it for herself. But if she can't do it the right way, according to her master's rules, then it doesn't count.
Right,
she's failed.
Right.
So speaking of her first attempt stealing lightsabers, we open with a young assassin who we'll come to know as May, played by Amandla Stenberg. The bottom half of her face is covered in a black mask. She's seeking out a Jedi known as Master Indara, played by Carrie Ann Moss, in a remote Jedi outpost. Finding her chumming it up in a local cantina, May relentlessly pushes Indara to attack her, telling her they have unfinished business and starting a fight with the other patrons to force Indara to intervene. Their fighting clears the bar, and Indara uses her comlink to call for help. At one point, May's face is revealed, and Indara seems to recognize her. Mei eventually ends the fight by sending one of her daggers flying toward the barkeep, forcing Indara to break her concentration to stop the dagger with the force, giving Mei the chance to send her other dagger flying into Indara's heart. Mei threatens the bar owner, but leaves when she sees his child cowering behind him. So we're on a new planet called Ueda. But yeah, what did you think about this whole fight scene?
My biggest complaint is that we lost Carrie Ann Moss in the opening scene, because I mean, science fiction royalty. You know what I mean? It's right. She's just, I could watch her be a Jedi all day. I feel like she was born to be a Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
Trinity from The Matrix is basically just a Jedi.
Was exactly Leslie Headland's thinking.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I love that she only at the very end takes her lightsaber out. Like she does do a lot of, like, it could have just been Trinity, honestly, most of the time. Great stuff. And I do like that they give us the weaknesses of both, right? I mean, Indara, you know, if that were a dark side user, she would have just sat there and watched her terrorize the whole place and just ignored her.
Right.
Maybe walked out. But because the Jedi have this need to help people, that's something that, you know, we see a lot of dark side users, a lot of Sith and dark side users play on.
Right.
And they use that to break their concentration, to pull them into fights, etc. Then we also see that Mei has a soft spot for kids.
Mm-hmm.
And parents' relationships with kids, maybe.
Yeah, we see her a few times. It seems like whenever she wants help with something, she pays a kid to help her.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, the fight choreo, people keep talking about. Well, they're calling it Leslie Headland and the fight choreographers, who are Christopher Clark Cohen and Lu Jung-chan. They call it Force Fu.
Boo. And,
People
have a better name.
Oh, I think it's cute. But people are talking about, you know, the fact they use Wuxia, but it's actually just like, I have to say, people who know a lot more about martial arts love to break down all the different ways that they combine everything from like fencing to you know, karate to everything that you can think of, Krav Maga. You know, medieval sword fighting, it's all finds its place in the choreography. So I can't claim to be an expert in fight choreography. I appreciate it when I see it. But if more people have more detailed understanding and knowledge about that, please do write in.
Yeah. I love that stuff. I just don't know enough about it.
Right. I love that each character has their own style, though. And yeah, I would love to hear people who are more knowledgeable about this break this down.
And you can I just say, you see this. This seems to be a lot more diverse of a fighting style layout. You know, we talk about the diversity of the cast, but also I think the different Jedi here feel so much more distinct than Jedi later in the canon timeline.
Right. And this is also because they are, we visit in these first two episodes an outpost. And, you know, when we talked about Young Jedi Adventures, we saw an even further outpost. And so the Jedi, they were more spread out during this time. And whereas we see later in the timeline, minor spoiler, but they're more concentrated just in Coruscant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just seems like they're more homogenized later.
Yeah. And we get our first cantina scene of the show, which for anyone who doesn't know, cantina scenes, which are like the bars of the Star Wars universe, are iconic. This one is Lomi Uski Noodle Shop. And we're also introduced to the comlink, which is just basically how characters communicate. And you can also use it for just audio or also with visual, with holograms. Did you get Princess Bride vibes from the way that Mei shows up and she says, "We have unfinished business. Attack me with all your strength," and then does her stance?
That's funny. I didn't put that together, but it makes total sense when you point it out. That's really funny.
Mei is so earnest in this. Like, I'm ready to feel for her when I hear her side of the story, because she really looks like she's about to cry when she's, you know, Indara stops the patrons in the bar from laughing at her for challenging a master Jedi. And she's like, "Attack me, Jedi." And Indara says, "Jedi do not attack unarmed." And she says, "Yes, you do." So You can just see there's so much emotion brewing up under that. I need to know, what does she mean? Yes, you do. What happened?
Yeah, something happened on her home planet. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something suspicious. Also, this line, "this attack me with all your strength," is one of the things that made me think not Sith. Because a Sith would have just done a sneak attack. The or maybe Sith it's do just not Maze. Care about like honor with, you know. Well, I don't know. I don't. Again, like even this whole idea of you have to kill without a weapon. You have to say, "attack me with all your strength." You know, give them a heads up. This all feels very rigid and not Sith-like.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we could be getting bamboozled by the making it look like a Sith thing. That's absolutely
true. The Sith are improvisational, and they are very results-oriented, right? They are,
right.
I don't think they care much about the methodology of the kill, just that it happens.
Well, I think that, I mean, what is Sith-like about this? And so we'll talk about the master she meets at the end of the episode later, but basically... it could very well be a woman with a voice distorter. He says that the Jedi are selling a dream and it's our job to undermine it. What we're trying to do is like to cut chinks in the armor of that dream, you know, expose the Jedi for the hypocrites that they are, basically. And that is very much the idea of the rule of two, is that you worm your way into the inside of the Jedi order and then and the Republic, for that matter, and, you know, spread the rot from within so that you can emerge stronger.
Right. Right. Okay.
I do. The one thing that makes me think it's maybe a Sith trial, like I said, is the fact she keeps going for the lightsabers, but then doesn't take it at the end. So feels like she's trying to pass a trial, and then if she could take the lightsaber in the right way, then she could bleed it and have it be a hers.
So she needs to complete the kill without a weapon to get the lightsaber.
This is what I'm thinking so far, but of course this remains to be seen. I do think it's interesting if the Bar dude had died, though. If like she really banked on Indara stopping him, but if Indara had let the Bardu die, that actually would have been better for proving their point that the Jedi are more selfish than they seem.
Right. Right. That's true.
I do think, though, that Undar looked like she wanted to stab Mei at one point with it when she got hold of one of her...
And
then dropped it.
The Jedi definitely are in denial that they still have emotions. It's just it's just part of it. Like, you know, in one way, it's sort of honorable to be doing this, you know, life of chastity and you know, lack of attachments and all this. But at the end of the day, you're still a person. You're still a humanoid. And you're going to have emotions. And I think that's one of the biggest weaknesses of the Jedi, is that they don't acknowledge that.
Right. Yeah. And this is exactly what we see Mei trying to goad the Jedi she fights into doing, you know. Indara, at one point, she does pull out her her lightsaber to deflect Mei's daggers, to cut them apart, basically. And Mei teases her, a Jedi doesn't pull her weapon unless prepared to kill, which seems to be something most people follow, except for Yord, who pulls out his weapon anytime he gets the opportunity.
Yord is just hanging saber all the time.
Yeah.
He loves it.
Yeah, he's so glad he could finally got that knight title.
The guy is, I think I called him a pick-me on the Discord.
Yes. Uh-huh.
He's a pick-me guy.
But yeah, Mei's cool. I love the daggers. I love seeing a Force user with a weapon other than a lightsaber for once. We see she has that spiral on her forehead, and I have to credit Padawan John on Twitter pointed out that it looks like a spiraling storm, which would link it back to the Nihil. And the Nihil, they use like storm... They use storm words basically for all their jargon. And so the head of the Nihil is called the Eye. High up, people are Tempests. And then below that, Storm, Strike. So it could be marking her rank in whatever the Nihil became at this point in the timeline.
So the Nihil are not allied with the Sith at all, right? Like, they are totally distinct.
I mean, yeah, they could be, but they are distinct groups.
Okay.
I mean, so basically the path of the open hand, I don't know if you got to this point in your books, but They're anti using the Force, basically. And they're like, especially not the Jedi. So they're not naturally going to ally with the Sith, but you could see some corrupted interpretation where they're like, well, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Right. You know what I mean? Right. Yeah. Right. Well, they're not allowed to use the Force, but these guys, they're pretty chill.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah, who knows? It's been now I think the book you're reading is set at like 300 something BBY, and now we're on 132 BBY. So it's been a couple hundred years. A lot could have changed.
All right.
Switching to the other, who we find out is a twin. So elsewhere, out in the Corpsec region of space, a young woman who looks exactly like May, but with shorter hair, whose name we'll learn is Osha Anasea, wakes up in her quarters on the Trade Federation cargo ship where she works under the table as a mechanic, or mechnik. With Pip, her pocket-sized repair droid, always by her side, she goes to work repairing a shield generator, getting temporarily distracted by a fire that breaks out, triggering memories of her and her sister May being separated from their parents as children. As she puts out the fire, a Jedi starship arrives, and her colleague asks her if those are her friends. So, yeah, I wonder, her colleague... I was surprised that her colleague knows that she used to be in the Jedi Order. I wonder if she tells everyone or if that was like a drunken night on He references Nar Shaddaa, which is a moon in the Nalhutta system, you know, where the huts, the slug-like people like Jabba live. So it's a big crime moon and party moon. So I'm wondering.
The huts do like their parties, I gotta say. They love it.
I'm wondering if some drunk night there, she told him her backstory, because it seems like that's not something you just spill.
yeah, exactly. It's strange because, no, I can't go later in the timeline. But, you know, we see that people who perhaps are not part of the Order at other times keep it secret because it's a really unusual thing for someone to join and leave.
Right. It's kind of stigmatizing. Then people want to know, like, why and what happened and what does that mean about you? Yeah.
Right. It's almost like, you know, there's some stigma sometimes with like discharges, untimely discharges from the military.
Right.
Even though it can happen for completely legitimate reasons. And so a lot of people will just not discuss it, basically.
Yeah. I don't know if we're going to see her fellow mechnik again named Filik, but that's his name, just in case you wanted to know. But this whole exchange where he says to her that they went out for an evening on Nar Shaddaa, and apparently she did not go that night, though she talks another time about drunken nights out with her colleagues. So I do have to question, why didn't she go that night? This makes it sound like she's a homebody, which is later contrasted by what she says. But more importantly, this is why she doesn't have an alibi during Indara's murder.
Mm-hmm. Although, if she were on Nar Shaddaa, wouldn't it have been easier for her to catch a ship somewhere else?
Well, but if she's surrounded by her colleagues.
Yeah, that's true. I just wonder how much...
I swear I was in my room. Yeah.
Yeah, I just wonder how much credence the Jedi are going to give to the words of a bunch of mechniks, people who are outlaws already, right?
True. But she doesn't even have that in this case.
And I love the cranky Trade Federation people. They're just like, oh, God damn it. The Jedi are here, and now we got to worry about violations of law. And these compliance people are awful.
Yeah, they always seem afraid of Jedi, like especially more than other people. You can tell that's how you know that. So we talked about the Trade Federation and Nemoidians in at the High Republic breakdown for anyone who's curious. But those are like the noseless people we see on the ship. They're always kind of squirrely.
Yeah, they are. They've always got something going on.
Yeah. And so mechnik, by the way, new word. It's late High Republic slang. And we learn that no humans are supposed to be doing external repairs. So maybe this explains some choices made about droids doing repairs in later films. But this means indeed Osha is technically an outlaw. And the Nemoidians, they kind of, because they're hiring outlaws, they can be a bit more careless. So at one point, Osha overhears them saying mechniks are disposable, but cargo is not. And Osha's like really good natured about it. She's like, we can hear you. We can hear you talking about us dying.
Yep. And doesn't she say something like, well, I'm not disposable, but he might be.
Right. Exactly. So this is good character building, but it does also make me wonder if any of this is, I don't know. I have to warn you in advance, I'm suspicious of every character in this show right now.
Except for Saul. Oh, fair enough. Yeah.
Except for Saul. Saul is pure. Saul is light. That's why he's named after the sun.
Yeah, I'm loving Saul. I mean, I didn't think they'd be able to sell me on a Jedi as much as they do in the original and prequel trilogies, but already in episode one, I was in. And then by the end of episode two, I was like, this guy's one of my favorites now.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, his facial expressions. We'll talk about some in particular.
Mm-hmm. But... mm-hmm. Now I want to watch Squid Game just to see him in something else.
Oh, you haven't seen Squid Games? It's so good.
I have not.
Okay. Yeah. So, I definitely recommend it. And yeah, he's very good, but it's just all, in general, it's a very good show. That is definitely has a high peculiar rating.
mm-hmm.
So we find out, yeah, so May's in CorpSec, which is the corporate sector, which is an area of space, which we get the earliest mention we've had previously in the timeline is in the Rogue One novelization, which is basically like year zero. So, and it's explored later in the timeline. So this is the earliest that we've seen it. Makes sense that the Trade Federation is there because they'll be associated with this later in time. Oh, yeah. And I love seeing the Nemoidians, by the way, that they're... fashion choices are just mwah. They're just like, give me Christopher Columbus, but make it haute couture, make it fashion.
I love it.
And I like that they seem to have, they got some flack for the accents in the original movie being mm-hmm. kind of caricaturish, and they seem to have toned that down and it feels more natural now. Just like,
normal, yeah. I think that's right. Speaking.
Yeah.
And I think they even toned it down a little bit in the Clone Wars. Like they had already taken that into consideration.
Right. Apparently they get to be more parodies of themselves as time goes on.
Fair enough. I mean, don't they all? I mean, I feel like every time we get a new character, like Yoda just keeps being more ridiculous.
Right.
As he goes on.
Right. Yeah. He's getting dotty in his old age. That's how I interpret it.
Fair enough.
But I have to note that they say the Nemoidians, so they want... the mechanics to repair their shields, but OSHA points out they don't usually use shields, and now they suddenly want to. So I'm paying attention to that. Like, why are they suddenly on higher alert? Something
that's a good question. Yeah.
Do you think the way OSHA reacted to fire, was that giving you vibes like the Hound from Game of Thrones with a family inspired fear of fire?
Yeah, I think it's just, it feels like a trauma response, right? But she's mm-hmm. just thrown back into this horrible situation that she went through. She's having PTSD flashbacks.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I have a feeling that that's going to play out in some key moment where there's going to be a fire and she has to cope with it or let it derail her.
Mm-hmm. She's going to have to like walk through something. Yep.
Right. Had to be fire. Had to be snakes. No. this is Lucasfilms. And I just have to shout out, by the way, also in this scene that there was a proto-gonk droid. So gonk droids are a proud Star Wars tradition. They look like trash cans on legs, and they're basically like walking batteries, technically called GNK series power droids, but called gonk droids because of the sounds they make.
Okay. All right. Can you... you can't give me an example of one later. So anyway, go on.
I mean, there's a prominent one in Rebels.
Oh, okay. All right. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Nice.
And we'll pick back up with that Jedi ship that showed up right after a quick break.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the Roaring Twenties. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
Okay, the Jedi arrivals turn out to be OSHA's former Padawan friend, Yord Fandar, played by Charlie Barnett, and his Padawan, Tassi Loa, played by Thara Shun. And they're looking for Osha, the Nemoidians cave quickly, admitting to employing mechnics and direct the Jedi to Osha's quarters. Osha's happy to see Yord, but he has to suppress any of his own smiles to inform Osha that she's a murder suspect. Osha says she was in her quarters at the time of Indara's murder, but that's not enough of an alibi, and they see the fact that Indara advised the Jedi to end Osha's training as a potential motive. Osha insists she's not only innocent, but it was her own difficult decision to leave the Order. But once the barkeep shows up to ID her, Yord feels he has no choice but to arrest her.
Do you think that Yord uses hairspray or the Force to keep his hair at that angle constantly?
I mean, the fact it took him so long to go through his trials makes me question how good his mastery of the Force is.
Okay, so we're on the hairspray train for that.
Yeah, I think so. Have to shout out the, I love the fact that there's now a hashtag going around called Yord Horde.
I mean, he's handsome. He just is very sus, I think. I mean, he's constantly being like, I don't trust Osha. I don't trust her. I don't trust her. And to me, that feels a little bit like projection.
Yeah. Do you get, though, Galad from the Wheel of Time vibes from him?
Ooh, I hadn't considered that.
Because Galad, for anyone who doesn't know, Galad is a character. He'll show up in season 3 of the TV show. He's known for being hot and following the rules. Those are his things.
Mm-hmm. Like to a fault, he will follow the rules. He would rather, throw his sister or brother under the bus than break a rule.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I just don't know enough about him so far. Right now, I've only seen him throw shade. And I wonder if it's to a personal end or if it is, like you say, just like hall monitor vibes.
I mean, it does also feel like he's very, like he feels like he has a lot to prove, especially when, Osha says to him like, oh, you finally got it. He's like, I made night 2 years ago,
Mm-hmm.
I have to point out that the actor who plays Yord, he's in his late 30s. I don't know if the character is supposed to be the same age, but that is pretty old to become a Jedi Knight compared to others.
It is.
It's not young, wow. At least.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, wow, man. You gotta mark that one.
Oh. we see lots of Jedi later who are much younger.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And even before this, we saw, of course, Fenestra Rowe, who we'll meet in this episode. She was the youngest to become a Jedi Knight at 16. So that's an exception, but...
Right. But if that's the beginning of the spectrum, then I think Yord is falling towards the end.
Yeah, agreed.
Now, can I ask you, Jedi, mm-hmm. Is there a limit to how many knights they can have or masters, or is it just whatever you get to that rank?
At this point in the timeline, actually, like 100 years before this, they ended up pressing a lot of people into Padawans into becoming Jedi more quickly just so they could fight the Nihil. But at this point, we see they do seem to be being more selective again. But I don't think it's not about mm-hmm. a certain quota, because at this point they had more space to expand too. I think it was just about when you're ready.
Interesting.
Although, of course, there'll be the certain number of members on the council. And there's like 3 Grandmaster Jedi at this point in time, I believe.
Okay.
Including
Is one
Yoda.
Of them green? Yeah.
Yes. We've already met Yoda in Young Jedi Adventures. We can talk about him.
We love it. I want to watch Young Jedi Adventures with my kids, but I tried to put it on once and they were like, what's this? Give me Mickey Mouse.
Yeah. You were saying that your daughter preferred The Bad Batch, which is a much darker tone.
Yeah. Well, I think Clone Wars, what she really liked is
Clone Wars.
Because she likes the intro music.
Right.
She pretends to play the drums along with it.
Right. No, that makes sense. So we see Yord with it. He has a yellow lightsaber, which we're seeing pop up more and more. But they were originally associated with like sentinels or mm-hmm. temple guards. So this means kind of a more guardian role. That's what I'm interpreting now until told otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
I think he seems sincere when he says to her, I never thought I would see you again. He seems really sad about it. And I'm wondering what kind of complexity lurks in that sadness.
Yeah. And I also want to say regarding lightsaber colors, it does feel like another part of the homogenization of the Jedi.
Right.
That later we don't see a lot of this color.
Right. Just blue and green, basically. Or red, if you're saying.
Right. Yeah, but you could tell there's a little something between them, right? Like they bonded at least right. as friends, maybe as something more.
Right. Yeah. She seems genuinely bubbly to see him. And he seems like he wants to be, but feels like he can't.
Yeah. And she seems excited to see him in a way that nobody else is.
Right.
Like everyone else seems exasperated with.
That's true. Oh, and that's such a shame. Then he's kind of like shitty to her two episodes. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's why everyone's exasperated with him, is that every time they try to open up to him, he shuts them down.
Yeah. So, by the way, his Padawan, Tassi Loa, she's called a Zygarian, which are cat people. Cat people. I love that they did practical makeup on her. But the Zygarians are, we do see them later in like the Clone Wars and other places. But also they are like part of the lore going back to the Old Republic, where they were known as powerful slave traders.
And yikes.
Yeah, they fought the Jedi in the Galactic Republic, saw them as enemies. And they did, during the High Republic, they were trading with the Nihil. So it's unusual in a way that...
Naughty, naughty.
We have a Zygarian Jedi, or Jedi-to-be at least, Padawan.
I wonder if that will come into the plot line, or if they're just like, hey, look, member Barry?
Yeah, well, it could be just like, you know, that Hedlund's like, I like Zygarians, here we go.
Yeah,
because she definitely is open about that with some species, or it could end up playing into the plot in an interesting way.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't mentioned on this podcast yet before also that the Padawans, you might notice the Padawans have braids. If they're from a species that doesn't have hair, they'll have like a strand of beads going down. It just basically signifies they're a Padawan. And I suppose there's some deeper meaning to how the braid is done about rank and things like that. Mm. But I can't tell you the details about that if they exist yet. I think that might need to be defined more.
Right.
But having Tassi there, it's a good reason for exposition. Although even Osha gets annoyed with Yord. She's like, you already know all this. But we learn that Osha left the order 6 years ago, which I think is something we need to keep in mind when we're trying to piece together timelines later. And she had been there since she was taken from this disaster in her homeworld, we'll be learning about, when she was the age of 8. And we learn from Tassi that there were doubts about taking her into the order because she was 8 years old, which just to clarify for anyone who doesn't know, that means they thought she was too old, not too young, too old.
Right, right, right. Which, again, it's really questionable because it is in part because of indoctrination, right? Will we be
right,
able
exactly.
to teach you to let go of all your preconceptions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
If, to quote Bo Burnham, it's problematic.
Yeah. Also, the other reason is because there were concerns about the fact that she seems to have not been able to fully let go, or even maybe it seems like partially let go of this traumatizing event from her childhood.
Mm-hmm. But should she have to let go of it? You know, I mean, certainly it would help her deal with trauma if she could let go a little bit. But that's part of her, right? That's one of her formative experiences.
Yeah. Yeah, and we get quite a few times in these two episodes, it's brought up about how Jedi are not supposed to form attachments because they lead to clinging and fear, which is, you know, very Buddhist, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But also on the other hand, as Saul puts it later, Saul being the Jedi who took in Osha, who saved her when she was a child, he says that, you know, it's good to remember the past because that's how you learn from it. So it's this duality I think we're going to be exploring in this also as well.
Right. I really like how Sol brings that up because it makes it feel... And I also like... And I know this is in the next scene, but I'll comment on it now. Mm-hmm. When the one girl sees fire, when the one youngling sees fire in the Force, he says, yeah, that's there too. It's all about balance. And I really like this guy. He's so willing to look at the dark side of the Force and acknowledge its existence to avoid using it. And that's something that I think other Jedi lack. Even in this era, I think that other Jedi are more fearful of it. And even fear of the dark side can lead to the dark side.
Right. Yeah. So Sol, played by Lee Jung-jae, he says that he, so the actor says that he modeled Sol after Qui-Gong Jinn, who's a character who pops up later. And you can definitely see that.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I've always wanted more Qui-Gong, so I'm glad we have this guy.
Yeah. He learned English just for this part. So basically, Leslie Headland saw him in Squid Games, and she's like, I need you in my show. And he was like, I want to be in Star Wars. And so he learned English to do this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He does quite a good job, too.
He does. I wouldn't have known that he's such a new English speaker.
Right. Yeah. I love, though, this the way he frames it as like, you know, the fact that you have to, the force is something, it's something powerful and it's something you have to respect. It reminds me of, you know, when my dad would always say, when we would go to the ocean as a kid, he's like, always keep one eye on the ocean. You have to respect it.
Mm.
Do you think, though, do you see, so the way Sol talks about the, he wants the younglings to think of the force as an ocean and basically give themselves over to it versus the Sith that are all about seizing the force. Doesn't that feel, not to bring up Wheel of Time a second time this episode, but doesn't that feel kind of like the distinction between the two types of channeling, mm-hmm. Wheel of Time, Sidar and Sidin?
Yeah, yeah. Bend it to your will or submit to it. Yeah.
Right.
I like that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, it's about that duality, I guess, again.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I just have to shout out for High Republic fans that there's a character, Elzar Man, who likes to talk about the force as an ocean, who lived about 100 years before this, so. Could be that he, that Sol was taught in his line or something like that.
Nice.
So just to set up the scene that we've been teasing about. So Master Sol, he's teaching younglings to meditate at the main Jedi temple on the capital city planet of Coruscant when he is interrupted by an even more revered Jedi master, Fenestra Ro, played by Rebecca Henderson. She informs him of his former Padawan Osha's arrest for Indara's murder, and Sol reluctantly agrees to help her investigate this matter, though Ro seems to have already made up her mind about Osha's guilt. Sol harbors clear doubts. So, yeah, listen to the Acolyte preview for if you want Fenestra's full backstory, but she's more than 100 years old at this point in the timeline. She's the one that I said has been a Jedi Master since age 15. She was, the youngest, so she's was seen as a prodigy, and a lot of book readers are like, what the fuck happened to her personality? She's now suddenly seems like Ms. Bureaucracy. We know from the books 100 years ago, we already know she went through a lot, lost a lot of people, had to go.
And is this phase 1 and 3?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So she ended up becoming what's called a way seeker, which is not officially leaving the Jedi Order, but kind of taking a leave of absence to like find herself. So we know that she was kind of a more independent thinker before, but now it seems like she's officially submitted to, I am the Jedi Order, must maintain control.
Yeah. And she does this thing that the Jedi like to do sometimes, which is rather than confront the darkness within the Order, deny it, and
right.
Try to sweep it under the rug.
Exactly. Which, yeah, I can see why. So apparently Leslie Headland, this is the only real big crossover character for this season. She says if there's a season 2, there will be more. But I can see why she says she chose this character, because just to show that contrast between the idealism of youth and what you can be morphed into once you become part of the power structure.
Okay, I'm into that. I like that. Yeah, we all become bureaucrats eventually, don't we?
Yes. And I know, some people are lamenting that her purple hair is gone. She had long purple hair when she was younger, and now it's been shaved, or it's gone at least. And she now has she's a Morallan, which a later character, Barriss Offee, is also a Morallan. But they are known for having these little black diamond tattoos that mark life events, and we now see a bunch of them on her scalp. So I think we'll probably get the story of what those mean and, what happened.
Yeah, I hope we see more of this character. I think she's an interesting concept to explore, especially now that I know that she is very different from her book, Youth.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to experience her in reverse for you, I think.
Reverse.
Do you think that Sol is overly attached to Osha?
It does seem like he has a different relationship with her than he does with other Padawans, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems like he knows. I mean, he remembered her sister's name.
Right.
Which feels deeper.
Well, that's probably, it was probably a memorable event.
Yeah, that and I guess he was stationed there, so he probably knew the locals before this whole thing happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he certainly is like, no, I have to go. I have to go. Which reminds me a lot of people later of, no, I have to go confront the person that I trained.
Yeah. Yeah, I do also notice, as you're saying, you know, about Vernestra sweeping stuff under the rug, she's always asking Sol to keep things secret. And I feel like on his own, he would not.
I agree with that. Sol is very transparent. I mean, I could see other Jedi that we've met, you know, saying, well, okay, maybe your sister's alive, but we got to keep this under wraps because otherwise I'm going to be ordered to bring you back. So let's not even say that I found you. Let's go figure this out before we go report back to the Jedi Order. But no, he calls the Jedi right away and says, hey, her sister's probably alive. And this allows people to talk, right? This allows her to go, oh, yeah, if you have her, then there's another attack elsewhere. So she couldn't have done that. Let's go all solve this together. And that's how we avoid the comedy of errors that is House of the Dragon.
How so? What do you mean?
Because House of the Dragon, like most of the conflicts are based off of people not talking to each other.
Oh,
clearly.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I always say clear communication.
Mm-hmm. And these Jedi actually are pretty clear in their communication to each other, maybe not to the public.
Right. Yeah. And by the way, I love the establishing shot of this scene where they show the exterior shot of the Jedi Temple. And we see that the city of Coruscant has not yet reached up to the temple's level. So when we see it later in the timeline, 100 years later, we see that the temple's even with the top levels of Coruscant. So, but 100 years before that, now it's still a couple levels below. So the temple is literally over everything else in the city.
You know, you see the people who buy apartments in New York City and then they build a building right in the view of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
They get cranky. Imagine buying a top level primo real estate apartment on Coruscant.
Yeah. And then
they're going to build a level right on top of you.
Yeah. I guess that's been happening for millennia.
Yep. Yep. That just stinks.
You know what else stinks? Being stuck on a prison ship.
Yep. Yep.
So we have Osha in her cell on a prison transfer ship manned only by droids. And Osha is surrounded by hardened criminals, one who's being kept incapacitated by a small starfish-like creature over his face. And the others plot to overpower the droids running the ship and get free. When Osha declines to join the rebellion, they leave her behind after critically damaging the ship, sending it hurtling down toward the surface of a snowy planet. Osha gets out of her cell with the help of Pip, her droid, and starts to run to the last escape pod, but then remembers a subdued prisoner. She helps him get free, and he thanks her by knocking her out of the way and stealing the escape pod, leaving Osha to die. She straps in and lands in one piece, though the ship is now rubble. And Osha wakes up to a shadow running away from the wreckage of the ship. And she follows the figure out into the snow where she experiences visions of her sister as a child and the fire that separated them. Osha confronts this vision and Mei admits to killing Indara in the vision and says she will kill them all. Then Osha wakes up back in the prison ship wreckage. So. I don't remember too many unmanned prison ships in the Clone Wars. Is this why?
Maybe this is the incident that made them go, we got to beef up security here.
Yeah. I mean, this would do it, right?
Yeah. I just can't imagine. I mean, maybe if it's a time of peace, maybe the Jedi have just gotten really lax at this point.
Yeah. I think that is definitely part of the case. Yeah. I love, though, they have introduced like some world building elements. Like they have these pilot droids that turn into chairs. That's really cool. They have these new, the Dybbuk, which are the parasite, quote unquote, parasite used to subdue violent criminals. It does weird stuff to your brain.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, what is that weird stuff? Because they're like, he's having a great time. Don't worry about him.
He's like tripping. And then I love when she shocks it to get it off the guy's face and it flies away. So cool.
Mm-hmm. That was cool.
And yeah, I like that Osha, first of all, we learn about her that she does seem like a lawful character because she says she has faith in the Jedi and the aliens are like, ha, 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 enjoy prison. But I also like, and this is after a contrast with another show later in the timeline that we've talked about recently that I know you had some trouble with this fact, John. It's nice to see a character struggle with the Force.
I agree with that. I think this is someone who clearly has an ability in the Force, but has lost touch with it. And I like mm-hmm. that kind of story. I think we see that in some of the video games.
Right. Right. That's true. Especially the Jedi games. Yeah. Yeah, but we see she can't use the Force to grab Pip. She's trying. So, yeah, we know she's somehow severed. I guess we'll find out how and why and what. But and then eventually the ship rolls her way. So she gets Pip and gets her out. And they land on this planet called Karlak, which is a location from the Clone Wars where a certain group will eventually be based called Death Watch.
Good catch.
We talked about the Vizslas when talking about the Mandalorian in previous episodes, and that's during the era of pre-Vizsla. And Karlak is also mentioned in the High Republic books. So
nice.
We also talked about another concept in the Old Republic episodes that comes up later in the timeline as well. Do you think that they're telling us Osha and Mei are a Force dyad?
Good question. So before we had confirmation that Mei was actually physically alive, for a minute I thought maybe that Osha was dissociating and becoming Mei, like sleep-killing Jedi. You know what I mean? Like she had, and she was so dissociating that she pictured this other version of herself as her dead twin sister.
Right.
And then I was like, nah, she's just actually alive. That's fine. That's fine. Yeah. Evil twin story. I'm in.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but maybe the question will be like, who is evil, or probably neither of them, to be honest.
Right. They all have things to learn, let's say.
But it's interesting. If the Sith are involved in this story, then we know from lore throughout the Star Wars is that the Sith, the rule of two, was in part an attempt to force a Force dyad. So if they find, and if Mei has something to do with the Sith and they find out she has a Force dyad, that could make them want to use her as a puppet in a certain way. By the way, I liked that the young versions of were played by real twins, Leah and Lauren Brady, which I clocked right away because I'm like, real identical twins aren't actually carbon copies of each other.
Right, for sure.
You can tell them apart, but it makes sense, you know, to use Amanda Stenberg in two roles. I'm not against that at all.
I mean, don't tell like every sitcom ever that twins are not completely identical, because then that'll ruin all these things like Sister. You ever watch that one? I used to watch that.
Oh, yeah. I used to love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
My sister and I used to watch it. Get it? Well, we did for real. But I love, yeah, speaking of the sister bond, I this poem, this creepy poem. So they say, you're with me, I'm with you, always one, but born is two. As above sits the stars and below lies the seas. I give you you and you give me me. And then at the end of the poem, the vision of Mei's character's eyes turn black.
Spooky. That does feel very much like forced. Like this feels like someone else is orchestrating this almost.
Maybe someone's already manipulating the Force dyad, although Mei doesn't seem to know in the next episode that her sister's alive.
Yeah. But I wonder if it's just a, you know, one way street over here for now.
Well, it's also interesting. So new rock stars pointed out that the way the little girls say this is they're sharing the last lines back and forth. And so the way they say it is both times Mei saying, I give you you, and Osha saying, you give me me. So it's only Mei giving Osha. That could mean nothing, but I thought it was an interesting point that
that noticed. Is interesting.
So meanwhile, Saul's current Padawan, Jeki Lon, played by Daphne Keen, as we talked about, collects her master to bring him to the detainment level to interrogate the prison ship escapees who have already been recaptured. They claim Osha started it all until Saul mind tricks them into telling him the real story. Fenestra says that still doesn't clear Osha's separate murder charges, but Fenestra assumes Osha died in the crash. she sent probe droids to check, but Saul is sure she's still alive, and he wants to go get her himself. He brings Jeki and Yord. Jeki has a lot of questions about Osha, and Saul explains that he was stationed on the planet Brendok 16 years ago, and he says it was May who started the fire in Osha's visions, a fire that killed their entire family and village. Jeki and Yord are surprised to learn Osha has a twin because May is not listed in the Jedi records. Jeki asks if May could be the real killer, but Saul is sure he saw May die. When the Jedi ship shows up, Osha runs, eventually cornered on a cliff where she almost falls before Saul catches her with the Force. When she tells him she knows May is alive, Saul believes her and believes her innocence. They all leave together. So just have to call out that the ship, by the way, that they arrived on when they showed up at the Nemoidian ship is a Jedi Vector. And so Jedi starfighters during the High Republic era, they had weapon system requirements that you had to use a lightsaber as a key, so no one but a Jedi could unlock them. I'm not like a ship aficionado, so again, if people have more expertise in that, that's like a whole thing on its own. So
right.
I'd love to hear other people's breakdowns of that. And cool. Of course, we get a reference to Jedi mind tricks, which only work on the weak-minded, which I think applies to these prisoners.
I love Saul doing that. Quiet your mind. And it's so casual.
Yeah.
It feels very in line with the original Jedi mind tricks we saw.
Right. Right. Very. Which was, again, well, no, now I'm thinking of Qui-Gon, but that's not the original we saw.
Right. Right.
We do learn from the High Republic comics that the Jedi Temple has a detention center with Sith containment cells. And this is like a multi-level high security prison in the temple on Coruscant. It was built centuries before this to detain the Sith and their allies. And so it's a massive complex, but it's also specially designed to hold Force wielders. So if we see a Force wielder there, it's going to be difficult for them to get out because they used Cortosis reinforced Duracrete. In rare Force-resistant alloys. And so Cortosis it's kind of like the vibranium of Star Wars in that it's super durable. Once it's processed, it's really flaky when you first mine it. But once it's processed, it has special properties that it absorbs and diffuses energy, basically. So it will dissipate a blaster bolt on contact, for example, and it can even short out a Jedi's lifesaver. But it can be overcharged. So it's not, you know, it's not endless. There's ways to get around it. But just saying, if we find people back here, then that's what we're dealing with.
Right.
We've got more hiding of Jedi records going on. We've got Jeki again, who's a Thelan human hybrid. We talked about that a lot in the Acolyte prep episode. And of course, we also talked about the two types of robes. The golden and white temple formal robes, like you see Yord when he goes to talk to the Nemoidians, that's like an official visit. So he's in white. But then when Saul and the others are going out on missions, they wear brown robes over that because that's their mission robes.
Yeah, that's cool. And I you know, I'm a sucker for a Jedi throwing off an outer robe to fight harder. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, we also get some extra fashion for the High Republic. Like, I love those belts that they have.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Padawans, they get a pop of color. So you'll see Jeki has like a green Obi behind her belt because she has a green lightsaber.
They're all about accessorizing.
Yes. Yeah, they had, I guess, with the time of peace, they had more time to put together their looks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they have like a holodeck. You know, they go to the fashion store. They're like, there's like actual Jedi fashion stores. They're like, all right, let's look at the holodeck. Here's what you would look like with these earrings and, you know, all that.
Right. Yeah, there should be. Or like Clueless had that where she has a computer and puts herself in all the outfits. But speaking of, so we have holo pics and Saul's looking at one of Osha and Jeki's like, why are you creeping on your former Padawan? This encourages sentimentality and nostalgia, which lead to attachment. And Saul's like, listen, past memories can serve as lessons. And if they don't meditate on the past, they're doomed to repeat their mistakes. And Jeki finishes this last sentence. So I'm guessing they've had this this conversation before, but I do notice with her throughout this, like she's more relaxed when Saul's not around. And when Saul walks in the room, she's immediately like, look how serious and good I am.
Yeah. I see both sides of this because, and also I'm disturbed by the idea of repeating mistakes. Like, does Saul know something about what happened on May's home planet?
Yeah.
That May knows, but, OSHA does not.
But right. I do wonder, he seems less guilt-ridden than the other three Jedi on May's list.
Right. What if they knew something and he didn't?
But did you notice Jackie, she's not thrilled about Yord coming and she's constantly giving Yord cheek, which is delightful, actually. But it's kind of funny because they seem similar in some ways. You know, they both seem like we are rule followers. And of course, this is the scene where we get that shirtless scene that the entire internet's going crazy over.
Oh, my God.
Sexy Whatever. Star Wars incoming.
Give them the eye candy. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fine. We can handle it. I think, yeah, there's good. There's going to be like the old axiom, if evil, why hot may apply. I'm sorry. I don't mean Yord Horde. I don't mean to like paint your guy in a bad light. I'm suspicious of everyone, but maybe especially him.
I'm fine with painting him in a bad light. He could be good. He could just be annoying.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm suspicious for sure. Cause he's just too attached to the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels like someone who has something to hide.
Yeah. And he's very trigger happy throughout this. And like mm-hmm. Fenestra, he's sure OSHA must have died in the crash, which I think the reason she didn't is because the ship skids when it lands. So that definitely saved her. It is interesting that Fenestra sends probe droids, which is something we associate with the quote unquote bad guys using later in the timeline.
Mm, yeah.
But the episode ends with May, who meets with someone along the water, someone dressed all in black with a black cape, a mask painted with a chilling smile and wielding a red lightsaber. And as May approaches this person, they say, the Jedi live in a dream they believe everyone shares. If you attack a Jedi with a weapon, you will fail. Steel or laser are no threat to them, but an acolyte. An acolyte kills without a weapon. An acolyte kills the dream. So, yeah, very Sith post rule of two. Let's expose the corruption and
right
from within. But I have a feeling for May, it's at least as much about personal revenge as of killing the dream. And that might be a conflict for her going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's right. I think it says in the intro, right, in the opening crawl, like she's risking exposure.
Right.
So this does seem to be against the mission of her order.
Right. Yeah. And May so far is obviously she's failed to kill without using a weapon. But the major thing that everyone's talking about going out of this is who is inside that helmet. We've got a voice distorter, so it could really be anyone. It doesn't have to be a man. I've heard theories that it could be there's prominent Siths, Tenebris and Plagueis, which we talked about in the preview episode. Could be Chimere, one of the witches that we saw in the trailers. Or I've even seen Indara herself suggested.
No.
Or Yord. Or how interesting would it be if it were Fenestra? It's not likely, and I think people would get upset, but it would be interesting just to see.
Yeah, that feels too cheap for me. I mean, hope not.
So we see May. She's got a purple cloak, which is known for, you know, it combines the red and the blue. It's kind of showing maybe a moral ambiguity. And Fenestra also wields a purple saber. And there is something from Legends lore that says that purple sabers, like the one that Mace Windu has later in the timeline, that mm-hmm. they are purple because it's someone is able to kind of wield the light side and the dark side in balance in the same time. So Fenestra's her lightsaber, which we'll definitely see in action, it's light purple. But I don't know, just calling attention to it just in case there's mm-hmm. something there. Because we're definitely seeing from her at her younger age that she will break the rules if she thinks it's for the best. And there's a certain absolutism in her. So I'm wary of her as well right now, even though she's a hero earlier on.
Yeah, I'm suspicious of everybody. I think you're right. I think that's the right call.
Yeah. And I have to point out, Mobius on our Discord said, the look of the helmet reminds me of Abeloth, which is, I think Abeloth is like the Mephisto of modern Star Wars. We talk about her in the, we talk about her in the Dawn of the Jedi episode, if for anyone who's curious, but just saying it could be, I think Abeloth, it's going to come into effect later in the timeline, like she does in the Legends books, but just putting it out there, it's not a bad call.
Right. Yeah, that's a cool poll.
Yeah.
I like it. I'm very curious to find out who this person is.
Yeah, definitely. Aren't we all? So say we all.
It's actually Merrick. It's just, you know, a cloud of dark side.
Right.
Cloud of shadow.
Yeah.
That's, oh, is that too much?
No, I made a joke about Merrick in the preview episode.
Okay.
Okay, so John and I just had a little conference off air, and since we since we are going so long, there's so much to break down in this first double episode. What we're actually going to do is we're going to pause here for now, and we're just going to release this on its own as the episode one breakdown, and tomorrow we will gather back and do episode two and release that then separately. So just for this first week. So guess what? You get two episodes this week. Yay!
What a day. What a day.
All right.
So that's, so, what, six podcasts on the main feed now? Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So we're going to skip over all of the outro stuff, save that for tomorrow's episode. Just there's a link in the show notes to all of the other podcasts that we're going to tell you more about tomorrow, and to the Discord and the Patreon and Supercasts and all that fun stuff. And we, as always, deeply appreciate our Discord server boosters and our lore masters. We promise we will thank you individually tomorrow. All right. Anything to add for episode one before we skedaddle for now?
This got me so hyped for the season, and I'm so excited for it. I can't believe people are review bombing, because boy, is this a good series, and you're missing out if you're not watching it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if you haven't watched yet, you have time to catch up before our next episode, so we don't spoil too.
Yep.
All right. We'll see you tomorrow.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. And connect with us on Twitter at @thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release three episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your six.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear three full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the Roaring Twenties. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.